Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're looking forward to this week's show with amazing recording artist Sky Stevens talking about his burgeoning music career and hit song Takes All Night. We're also talking with author and relationship coach Donna Marie Thompson about getting over a breakup. Social media expert Patrick Charles drops in to talk about the apparent demise of the music industry. Alt country group The Strumbellas also pass by, letting us know about their latest single, In This Life. We wrap things up with a remix from Edward Maya, Mono in Love.
Capture your need for sound.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is rising music star Sky Stevens. Sky, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Kelly Alexander Show?
I'm so happy to have you on, Sky, and I wanted to ask you, I guess, first of all, did you know since childhood that a career in the arts or a career in music was something that was going to happen for you?
There was something about, my first, singing and dancing class when I was five that really resonated with me. You know, I tried baseball and hockey and football and, everything like that, but as soon as I started, something artistic, I don't know, it was like the real me sort of came alive, and, you know, I kind of haven't stopped ever since.
And when you were figuring out that this is something that would happen for you, did you know it was always going to be music, or did you think, oh, maybe acting?
Of course, all arts, I thought of movies and everything like that. But, I remember, one of my earlier Christmases when I was 5 or 6 years old, and I got a cash register, and I took a Sharpie marker, and I wrote on it, 4CD. It was like a toy cash register, and I just, knew I wanted to start saving money to make a CD someday. So I didn't even knew, I don't know what that entails, but back then I had no idea, but I just knew I wanted to do it, so I've kind of been determined since then.
Did you have an artist or a band that you really looked up to when you were growing up and were like, yeah, that's who I want to be, or I want to be like that person?
For sure. When I was a kid, all the big bands were Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, so it was very kind of boy driven, and there was a lot of encouragement for things like that. But the real artist that really pulled it out of me was Michael Jackson, because I remember hearing one of my parents' CDs, and I was just I started dancing and singing along, and then I was like, what does this look like, and they showed me a greatest hits VHS of all his music videos, and then I was just like, I have to do this, I have to do something of this magnitude, And I was such a kid, too, but I was just so set on this thing of being a performer, and I even kind of paid tribute to Michael in my first music video for Takes All Night. There's a part of the video where it shows excerpts of my feet kind of doing some cool, dance work. And there's a light that follows my movement, and that's sort of like my modern spin on Billie Jean when Michael Jackson's walking down the street and a sidewalk lights up behind him. So, it's like a little tribute to him.
Do you want to work with some of the producers maybe that, worked with him, like Rodney Jerkins or like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis? Does that sort of come down to you as well, that there's people hey, they worked magic with him, I'd love to have a chance too?
Yeah, believe it or not, my producer Mishka actually worked on Michael Jackson. So I was blessed at the start to have a producer to take me on that was someone that has worked for Michael. And he's also worked with Rodney, too. So, I just am blessed in that sense. But I would also love to, do a record with Rodney or another Michael Jackson producer as well.
Can we talk about your song Takes All Night? Because it's fantastic, and so many people are listening to it and getting, views and downloads and all that sort of great stuff. Did you think when you were in the process of recording it that you could have a hit song on your hands?
There was definitely something about the record that resonated with me from the very first time, we put it together with the melodies and the verses and the beat. And I don't know, there was just this energy that just synergized it, like my whole car when I heard it. You know, I almost drove into the bus in front of me because I was just so taken over by it. And I just knew that, like, if it got into the right hands of someone, it could do something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, when you have this feeling and you're like, there's just something right about this that I just know, if it got the chance, it could do something. It really, really could. And I was just super lucky to have a radio camp that, you know, heard it and believed in it and wanted to work with the record. And, you know, since then I've toured to, you know, over 30, 40 cities by now, internationally, you know, in clubs, at, you know, big stadiums, at like Six Flags. You know, now I'm on tour with the Pop Festival, and it was just, you know, one record that sort of catapulted me into this, and I'm just so grateful for it.
Was it fairly easy to put the song together? Because I often hear that hit songs almost, you know, sort of drop from the sky in a way. I know some people obviously labor over songs, but then you often hear like these big artists like Elton John or whatever, and they're like, or even Adele with Skyfall. She's like, oh, I wrote it in 10 minutes. So, like, was that the vibe that was going on with Takes All Night?
I want to say no and yes at
okay.
the same time.
That's good.
The backing track, the actual track of the song is so powerful. And the verses and pre-chorus and everything like that was all there. But the hook was actually, we must have worked on the hook like 100 times. Like, it took an army of like thoughts to kind of put it down. And then after that, you know, there were so many different drafts of the mix. So, like, it was almost like the outline was there, but it wasn't colored in, you know? Mm-hmm. So it took a lot to really, really do it. So yes and no, you know.
Let's talk about dancing again, because you mentioned before, obviously, Michael Jackson has influenced you. And I was reading about, you know, how important dance seems to be in your life. So can you explain, like, could you be an artist that didn't move? Or, like, I remember reading or listening to an interview from Janet Jackson, and she said she cannot do music without moving, without dancing.
Yeah, I can't either. I actually really, really struggle to sing when I'm not even standing.
Okay.
Or at least connect to it in that sense. I completely agree with that. Just because I think that dancing is also a language. It's an expression of, you know, what's going on internally, and to, you know, put it into your physical being while you're also emoting words. It's just like another, it's like a whole other dimension you're bringing to the table. And I actually learned how to sing while dancing when I was a kid in these like small, you know, singing, moving kid classes, like for a year, you know, when I was 5 and 6. That's how I learned how to sing, was while I was moving. So it's always been like, when people, you know, talk about the show and they're like, oh, you're dancing and stuff like that, I'm like, well, of course. Like, it just seems like an obvious, you know, thing that I have to move while I'm singing. Because it's just sort of what I've always known, you know? But dancing is like super important to me. Especially when you're putting it out there, on the table, I just think there's something powerful about, you know, stepping and communicating something with your body.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Sky Stevens. Make sure to check him out on his website, skystevens.com. What can we expect next from you musically? Like, obviously, Takes All Night is like its own entity right now and doing its thing. What's next?
Well, the second single I released into the States was a record called Rewind. And that had featured in the music video an actress from the show Pretty Little Liars, Sasha Pierce. And Rewind got a lot of traction in the States. We got onto the Billboard Dance Chart with it, into the top 25. So it was really great, and it was a great response. And we just put a second single into Canada, and the record is called Angel. We just started getting some ads with that, and people have been, like, that aren't even in Canada, because it's only in Canada and exclusively for Canadian Top 40. People have been, like, streaming a couple radio stations websites from the States and been calling and requesting to hear the song through a web internet radio. Like, it's just insane. So, you know, my fans that have heard it loved it. So I'm hoping that Angel will also fulfill the needs of a Ticks All Night listener as well.
What are your biggest goals, you know, career-wise? Like, do you want, and I'm just using this as an example because you're sort of in that genre, but, like, do you want to be in the realm of Justin Bieber and Cody Simpson and Justin Timberlake? Like, is that what you want for yourself?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, I love that I can even be compared to them. I mean, I'm so humbled that my name can kind of even fall into that category. It's, you know, crazy to just to think that. But yeah, that's definitely something I'd want to do. You know, big stadium shows with, you know, thousands of lights and tons of dancers and just big, almost like the Vegas-style production. That's what I, you know, envision for myself. I mean, right now I'm on like a small pop tour, and I try to bring that fire to that show with like a light up LED jacket, splatter painted glasses, and all kinds of like crazy dance. And my dancers are almost like having a heart attack halfway through because there's just so much choreography. But yeah, like a big production show is something I definitely want to do.
Well, I have to tell you, I interviewed Lady Gaga just as things were starting to roll for her, and she had the same outlook. And I had spoken to her after she'd done her first performance on So You Think You Can Dance, when she had those, I don't know if you saw that, when she had the light up sunglasses, that the LED and the, you know, and I remember talking to her about it, and she just was like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then like, literally within a year, she had done like all of it. So you sound like you're on the right path, that's for sure.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to ask you as well, like, how important is social media for you? Because it seems like that is such an important tool. I mean, as we know, Justin Bieber got discovered that way, and he's really worked it to the max with over 41 million Twitter followers. And, you know, Cody Simpson has over 5 million. And, like, even other artists, like, even you know, like, Beyonce, like, they've got their Twitter accounts that they need to deal with. Like, how important is it for you to connect with your fans like that?
It's pretty important. I know, like, I spend kind of all day on it, going in and out, you know, dedicating probably, it's always in my hand, pretty much. Like, I'm always favoriting and retweeting and responding to fans on Twitter, like insane. And I actually dedicate a whole day on Sunday for an hour, and I do a live, like, talk back, and I'll do, like, Sunday with Sky.
Oh, very good.
and I do, like, a live Q&A on Twitter once a week for, like, fans to engage. And then I also make, you know, tour videos of just sort of like me on tour, you know, behind the scenes, or just little excerpts of the show that I post on YouTube. And then other things I'll do, like I'll be in the dance studio and I'll be freestyling to some song or something, and I'll post like a minute and a half of what I was doing, like, on YouTube, just for fans to like sort of be with me in the studio flow and check it out. So I'm very active with it. It is definitely crucial, I think, at this point for an artist. Like, it's almost detrimental if you're not active on it.
That's for sure, definitely.
Like, it's almost become like, I don't know, like a skill. Like, you kind of have to sing, you have to dance, and you have to do social media, and, you know, it like falls into it.
Now, I know you're on tour and sort of all over the place, but do you have a place that you actually call home now? Because I think if I understand things correctly, you're from the East Coast, but where do you actually hang your hat? And do you like being home, or are you quite happy to be out and about?
No, to be honest, like, I'm in my hotel room in Chicago right now, looking out the window at the city on the phone with you, and this is home right now. Like, this is actually where I feel the most, like, comfortable and just relaxed. It's when I'm, quote-unquote, home, like, back in L.A. in my apartment, I feel like everything falls apart. You know, I just, for me, like, home is sort of being on the road and on tour.
Okay, fantastic. And before I let you go, you know, we've talked about some of your musical influences. Is there an artist or a band out there right now that you would love to collaborate with?
Oh, for sure. I think, like, David Guetta, what he does with his beats are just insanity, and I would love to do a huge, like, club record with him. That's definitely a dream. I think Will.i.am is amazing as well. I also think Chris Brown does some pretty incredible stuff, and I'd love to do like a dance video with him as well. I actually met Wiz Khalifa at the Billboard Awards, and he is so cool, and I respect him so much. So if I were to do like a collaboration with any rapper, it would definitely be him. All things aside, Rihanna is pretty boss. So if that day ever came together where these worlds united, I would totally try to get on that train. But I don't think that's going to happen for a while. But she's definitely there.
You know? You keep your eye on the prize, that's for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, can't go wrong with a Rihanna record.
Well, Sky, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it, and we wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
That's a music star and rising, you know, music aficionado, that's for sure, Sky Stevens. Make sure you check him out on his website for all his social media, skystevens.com.
Hey, what's going on? This is Sky Stevens, and you're hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
In SoundScan history that the music industry actually sold less than 5 million units. And over 20 years of collecting data, SoundScan says consumers actually put their money where their ears were less than ever. Experts say the cannibalization can't necessarily be attributed to one thing, but what is the cause? To talk about all of this, our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, thanks for joining us this week on the show.
No problem. How you doing?
Very good. So I'm actually excited to talk to you about this because I think, you know, these types of words are always bandied about, and I think a lot of people in the public don't really understand like what SoundScan actually is and when it started.
Well, what SoundScan does is they actually they keep tabs on how much people are actually buying. This is something that's been going on since 1991, okay. And they basically, you know, they take care of the album charts, the single charts, everything that gets sold as far as music goes. They keep an eye on it, and they report for the industry, and everybody knows that this album was number one, this album was number two. That information comes from SoundScan.
Okay. And when we sort of, I guess, talk about this downfall in the last little while, if you will, is it because of illegal downloads? Is that the problem?
Well, it's a lot of things, and it's like it's kind of good news and bad news almost, because everybody's afraid that okay, album sales are down. That's been what we've been talking about for the last like couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, streaming is doing better than ever. So the industry can't really have it both ways. So they sort of can't complain too much because yes, people aren't buying as many physical CDs and actual downloads, but they seem to be streaming more. There is one thing though that's a big problem. And that's YouTube.
Oh, let's talk about YouTube, because I'm just going to, I guess, put myself out there. I love YouTube for the fact that I can find remixes that I sometimes can't find anywhere else. Like, I'm a huge remix person.
Right.
And so, especially of, like, 90s stuff. And, like, sometimes it's just so great to go back and be like, oh, my God, like, here's this Mariah Carey remix that I didn't know about or whatever.
Yeah.
So I find you can find cool things like that. And obviously, you can obviously get up-to-date stuff, because I know when I'm doing my some of my radio work, like if we're playing a new song that I haven't quite understood yet, I'll go check them out on YouTube and then check it out there.
Yes, and you see, you're part of the problem.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are satisfied just to hear something on YouTube and play it a bunch of times. I mean, that's how videos, you know, wind up getting millions and millions of views, is that people are actually listening to YouTube more so than watching it.
Okay.
You know, yep. A lot of kids now will just, rather than, you know, getting a subscription for a streaming service or buying a download from iTunes, they'd rather just put something on YouTube and hear it, and they've heard it. Yep. And that's kind of the end of the story. So that's mm-hmm. the thing that is a big issue as far as making money goes, because obviously YouTube is paying fractions of pennies to people.
Right. Yes. Okay. So I am the problem, I guess.
Which is part of the problem.
And exactly. Now, is that where the unspent dollars are going? Or, because actually I wanted to tell you this, you're going to be proud of me. I went into HMV like two days ago, and I haven't been in a long time. And I went in and I actually got excited being in the store again. Like, it was fun to see, like, because I sort of went over to the electronic music, because I'm actually a big fan of the series Saint Germain Cafe, like all that acid jazz stuff. So, and because I don't spend the time, you know, scoping this stuff all out online, it was sort of good to see, oh, there's one I don't have yet. And then I found something from George Michael that I didn't have. So basically I had to choose what I wanted and leave, because I was going to spend thousands of dollars on HMV.
Yeah, like the good old days.
Exactly. But it was cool to be in there, Patrick. So is there, like, is anyone doing what I'm doing, or is the unspent dollars going other places?
Well, I think it's going other places. I mean, there will always be people doing that. There will always be people still buying vinyl and still buying old CDs. Even cassettes mm-hmm. are making a comeback. There's going to be, you know, there's Record Store Day, right? They've been doing that for a while.
Yep.
There's going to be Cassette Store Day starting next year.
Oh, my God.
So people will be buying limited edition cassettes again.
Tape-hiss.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Love it.
I mean, it's amazing. But I think a lot of the dollars are actually going to concerts.
Oh, okay.
You know, we were talking about Oceaga earlier, mm-hmm. Which just happened in Montreal. And, you know, a lot of the people who go to shows like that are people who used to probably spend a lot more money on albums. And now they're spending, you know, a couple of $100 on tickets for a festival over the weekend. And you're really getting a lot of bang for your buck.
Wow. Okay. And we had talked about, I think, several weeks ago when you were on the show about the, like, I just can't believe how much ticket prices are. Like, I just feel like they're, like, I remember when it was a big deal for me to spend like $120 on a Janet ticket.
Absolutely.
And now, like, you just see like some of these, you know, like $240 for a ticket. Like, Madonna's up over like $400. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I think people are trying to, artists, I should say, are trying to obviously subsidize their lacking record sales with very expensive tickets.
Okay.
That's a big thing that's going on right now, because it's like a big deal to see somebody play live more so than ever before, because, you know, nobody's buying the albums.
Right. Yeah, because it's funny. Like, I have a friend of mine, as you know, I'm a huge Janet fan and I love her to pieces, and I'll do whatever I can to see her. My friend is the same for Madonna. Like she's always been that way. Like she was like, you know, the first, like they drove to Vermont, for example, when the Sex book came out, cause she wanted to have like one of the first copies and stuff.
Right. Right.
Like that's how she was about Madonna. But it was interesting to note in the last couple of years, that because she has a family now and like, you know, pays a mortgage and all this kind of stuff, she actually said to me the last time, when Madonna was coming to Montreal, she said, "I'm not doing it." I'm like, "You're not going." She's like, you know, I love her and she means, because that's her childhood, right? Like Madonna was her sort of childhood. And she's like, "You know how much I love her, Kel, just like you love Janet." But she's like, "I cannot justify it." She's like, "You know, my son needs things and I can't justify like $400 for me and like a ticket." Like she's like, "That's $800 for me and someone to go." She's like, "I can't do it."
Yeah.
So for her to not go,
it really is
crazy. And it's sad. To me, it's sad because like, you know, and again, I'm sure Madonna doesn't care because she's got a plethora of fans, but like my friend loves her. You know what I mean? Like she's a true fan. She's not going just because it's cool. She's not an industry person because she needs to check out the scene. Like she loves Madonna, but she has now come to the point where she's like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, well, that's funny. That's where it's going. And I mean, even Madonna did that thing on her, I'm not sure if it was the last record or the one before, where if you bought a ticket, you got a free download of the album.
Oh, good.
And that's one of the things that people are starting to do. You know, they're trying to get those sales to count as well, even though it's actually a giveaway.
Right.
But similar to what Jay-Z just did with Samsung, yeah, people are trying to get those sales to count. So
did that flop, Patrick? Because I feel like his album's not doing well, and I don't think that thing with Samsung, did it work? Because I've only heard negative things about it.
Yeah, well, it kind of worked because I think Jay-Z was probably in the mainstream press more than he's ever been.
Okay.
I mean, I saw stuff about this album and this promotional stunt everywhere. Usually you would only really read about Jay-Z. There was a time when you'd only read about Jay-Z, you know, in rap magazines and rap websites.
Yeah.
Then there was a point where you got to read about him on sort of just general kind of pop websites.
Uh-huh,
and now I feel like he was just in the news.
Yeah.
You know, he did this massive thing and it was in the news. So it's got to be good for him.
Okay, so on some level, it's working. All right.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being on the show. I always look forward to our chats and me asking all these crazy questions that I'm asking you to come up with answers for. So thank you so much for your time this week.
Thank you. See you next time.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Make sure to check him out on Twitter at GetPatrick.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
For the most part, it is never easy when your romantic relationship comes to an end. Whether you are the dumper or the dumpee, lots of emotions can run through your mind and body, and it can take a while to get over it, especially if you are very attached to your significant other. To give us some advice on how to get through this sometimes challenging journey is author of the book, How to Bounce Back from Relationship Breakup, and relationship coach, Dawn Marie Thompson. Dawn Marie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, first things first, Dawn Marie, I guess I wanted to point out that whether you are the person ending the relationship or the other way around, it can be, you know, definitely painful for both, because sometimes, you know, even the dumper loves their mate very much and you know, probably wouldn't want to end things, but for whatever reasons, things aren't going well and they need to call it a day.
Well, absolutely. Relationships are very complex and multi-layered. And there's no quick fix and there's no simple solution. So whether you're the one leaving or the one that's being left, there's all sorts of feelings and lost memories and potential there. So there's pain all the way around.
Now, with the divorce rate, you know, being so high these days, I think a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of people are breaking up and probably breaking up in long-term relationships. What is the first suggestion that you would give for someone in the immediate hours and days following, you know, the breakup? Because to me, this is the danger zone time where, you know, you might do something crazy because you're in so much pain, like text them a million times, maybe leave them some sort of unpleasant message, you know, God forbid, dump all their clothes on the front lawn. Like, what do you tell people in those immediate days and hours following?
Well, the immediate response should be calm and withdrawn. You basically pull back into yourself and you do nothing, make no contact, make no major decisions. Basically, try to pull into yourself and do some internal soul searching and some basic healing. So anything that you say or do out of anger or raw emotion is probably not a good thing. So the best thing to do is almost nothing and begin to circle in with like close friends or family and just divert yourself. If you have meditation practices, if you have a pet, if you have some other diversion, the best thing you could do is divert your attention so that you have time to process this in the back of your mind.
And something that has always concerned me, because I've had friends like this, you know, they were so attached to that person that when they broke up or when they were broken up with, they didn't have anything else. So even as like a person who might be in a very fine relationship right now, how important is it, Donna, to sort of have that independence in your life and have a life of your own?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because that's exactly me. I had a 17-year relationship, and I worked like a maniac. So the only two things in my life were my man and my job. And then when he decided to go astray, I was left with nothing. And it's absolutely the most unnerving feeling on earth. So I would encourage anyone who's just basically that their world revolves around someone else, begin gently to join a club, go out to dinner with some friends, and just basically start some new interests on your own. Very gently. It doesn't need to be a dramatic thing that you do four nights a week, but begin to make connections. Because when I was left with nothing, we hung on for an extra year because I had no connections, and that was a very bad thing. So whatever you can do to fill out your life, round out your life, that's a great thing, even when things are going well in your relationship.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because, for example, I have a friend now, and you know, she's madly in love with her husband. They've been together since they were 18. I think they're around 27, 28 right now. She cannot go anywhere without him. Like, you know, if they go to dinner, he's going to be there. I mean, like, you know, randomly she will just go out with the girls, but everything revolves around their schedule and you know, how that sort of plays a part in her own life. And my fear for her, and it's not that I'm trying to be morbid or anything, but like, you know, let's say they do make it to 60 or 70 years old, or even, God forbid, let's say something happens to him in a car accident or whatever. I don't think she could function without him. So like you said, even if things are going well, it's not good to be entirely wrapped up in another person's life.
Absolutely. Okay, there's three pieces of a couple. There's you, your mate, and the relationship. And those are three separate entities. And all three of them need to be healthy separately to make it all work better. So it's very difficult when things are going great to say, oh, you should diversify. But believe me, if you wait too long, it's not good. And you're also missing a lot of different perspectives. I was together 21 years, but the first 17 were fantastic. And we walked alike, we talked alike, we said everything at the same time. And we basically morphed into the same person. Well, that's not quite good. So if you actually expand your horizon, even go to happy hour, something simple, an hour, you basically get different insights, different perspectives. It refreshes, it energizes you.
Now, going back to sort of the immediate aftershock of the breakup in the days and sort of hours following, how long before you can start to think rationally again? Because, you know, I've been there where it just seems like this roller coaster of emotion is going on. And like you know, within the first day or so, you're trying to be like, well, I'm going to be okay. And I'm going to join a gym, or like what, and you're sort of doing all these things. Like, how long before you should really pull back and just, you know, sort of stay calm and make sound decisions and not these decisions based on you being in supreme emotional pain?
Well, everyone's different, but it sounds like for most people that I'm talking to, the first 2 weeks are very raw, and that's when most of the mistakes were. You've seen the song, like, I need you now. I promise not to call, but I need you now. So those are the raw reaction emotions, and it happens within the first 2 weeks. And you'll know your triggers, whether being alone on a Saturday night or some special day, or we used to do things on Thursdays. Those are the times, if you could substitute activities, you can get yourself through those specific times. But after the first 2 weeks, I think your emotions settle down to be less raw, and you begin to see a little bit clearly. But some people can take a month up to 3 months, basically going back and forth. And I always counsel my people, it could be two steps forward, one step back. It's not just, you know, trajectory, like a, you know, a hockey stick graph. You don't just bolt out of, you know, a relationship breakup. It's a process. So give yourself some time, some patience, and I suggest that the women do something nice for themselves, and the guys just get involved in sports or just do something. And it really, really helps to divert your mind.
And Donna Marie, I guess a question that would come to mind is, you know, after those first 2 weeks, like you said, of raw emotion, which I think all of us go through again, those first 14 days, Do you let, like, once you start to calm down, because I think you do start to feel your body sort of relax a little and just sort of, you know, even if you're still very upset, but there's a moment where you're just sort of, you can feel a little bit of the air rushing out of you and it's okay. Is that when you let the emotions start to come? Because it's almost like, do you let your body just sort of bring the emotions and the memories to you, or do you actually have to actively try to process and maybe journalize and stuff like that?
Well, I guess different people take different approaches, but your emotions are in there whether you like them or not, and they're going to come out whether you want them to or not. So it's a matter of whether you take control. And the one of the things I do in my 5Es is we talk about explore what happened. And people write 20 pages of, oh, you did this and they did that and we said this and they said that. And it basically gets a diary of all the stuff. And as soon as you unload that, your brain can move on to something else. So I like, it's just my personality, but I like to take a constructive approach and begin to take charge. But it's fine to cry. It's fine to grieve. It's fine to process those emotions. What I'm guarding against is saying and doing things based on those emotions. So you can't hide it. You can't, you know, put those emotions down, but just don't act on them. So begin to explore inside what happened, and that'll really help you get clear.
Joining us on the show is author of the book, How to Bounce Back from Relationship Breakup, and relationship coach, Donna Marie Thompson. Make sure to check her out at bouncingbacknow.com. Donna Marie, you mentioned sort of just a few seconds ago, your 5 E's of recovery. What are they?
Well, the first E we talked about is explore what happened. Get down on paper. It unloads all of your brain to put it down and say, my assumptions, these are my beliefs, and this is what happened. So that's the first one. The second is eliminate unwanted feelings. You'll discover that you have the power to change your feelings. If I call you and say, oh, my car's wrecked, please come pick me up, that's one emotion. But I could call you in the next minute and say, oh, I've been invited to a party, come with me. You can change your feelings in a matter of 10 seconds. So eliminating unwanted feelings is within your power. The third is where you begin to get more stable and you embrace the situation. You probably heard the saying, what is, is. And once you accept that, that sets the foundation for your recovery. The fourth, you're looking forward. Envision your future. Things have changed. Things will never be the same. The future will be different based on what your breakup, but it will be a new future, and you're in the driver's seat. And the fifth is energize your world. You'll begin to hit your stride as you plan your new future. And what the key element there is, you reach back and try to help someone else. You look outside yourself, and then you know you're way forward on your healing process.
Now, two women who went through highly publicized scandals and sort of subsequent breakups with their men in the last, you know, year to 18 months are Sandra Bullock and Elin Woods. What are your thoughts on how they handled their painful situations? Because I think, you know, even though they are public figures, what they went through is very common to us normal folk.
Yes, it's common, but it's also very visible. Most of our breakups happen in dark corners. This is publicized all over the place, so they've got extra baggage to deal with. But one of the things that they've done is, rather than deeply questioning their own worth and their own value and their own actions and what they did wrong, what they're doing, they had a mate that their behavior was clearly out of line. They didn't bring it back on themselves. They realized that their partner misbehaved. And so it's about them. It's not about you. The people that don't do well in breakups pull it all back on themselves. If only I could have done this. If only I said that. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not handsome enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. So rather than pulling it all back on yourself, you figure out what happened, and especially if there's clearly violations such as cheating, it's really about them. And so you don't take all that extra baggage on. And I think those are what the successful people do, is say, I did what I could. They made a different choice.
And Donna Marie, where can people get a copy of your book? Because I know that it will be completely helpful for people going through this situation.
Well, great. I have autographed books with custom bookmarks available at bouncingbackfromloss.com.
Fantastic. Donna Marie, you've been awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
That's author of the book, How to Bounce Back from Relationship Breakup, and relationship coach, Donna Marie Thompson. Make sure to check her out, bouncingbacknow.com.
Capture your need for sound.
We're very happy to be joined by a rising band in the music industry, the Strumbellas, who were conceived in Lindsay, Ontario, but do their thing in the big city of Toronto. Joining us is lead singer Simon Ward. Simon, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, thank you, Kelly. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
So, Simon, talk to us about how the band actually got its start.
Well, I moved to Toronto, and then I was just looking to start a band because I've never really been in a band before, and so I put an ad on Craigslist, just looking for some people to join. And so I had about, 10 or 15 people get back to me saying, hey, we'd like to come try jamming. So they all came to my little apartment in Toronto, and then we practiced for about, a few months, and then some people left, some people came, and in the end, we got down to six people, and so that's basically how the band started.
How would you describe your sound? Because I've heard the word sort of alt-country bandied about.
I love alt-country. Like, if somebody calls our music alt-country, that makes me super happy because it's, like, my favorite style of music. So that'd be, like, my number one thing to call it, if that works.
And how does the band dynamic work when it actually comes to writing? Do you do all the heavy lifting, or is it a collaborative effort?
Oh, I mean, I do, like, write the song basically kind of on my own first, just because I get a little shy writing with other people. So I do write the bones and the lyrics and the melodies and stuff, but once it goes to the jam room, the whole band contributes to some things that kind of make it to where it is. So I call it, like, a three-stage process. It goes from, like, my apartment by myself to the jam room, and then to the studio.
And how long would you say the process is, like, from writing a song to having it done? Like, is it a couple of weeks, or do you get it done in, like, 3 days?
For every song, like, some songs, I'll dig out of the woodworks from a year that I found a voice memo, and then the band puts it together really fast. Some songs, we're going to do our album right now, and then, like, I just wrote a new song, like, 2 weeks ago, and we were like, hey, let's throw this one on the album because we like it. So we had to, like, rush it and get it ready to go. So it's totally different for every song, I find.
Talk to us about your Juno-nominated album, My Father and the Hunter. Obviously, that's, like, a very noteworthy title. It's a heavy title to carry, and it sounds like the album, has a certain message to it. What would you say?
Well, it's kind of a concept album, a bit about my dad. I got a lot of weird stuff going on inside me about him. So a lot of the songs are about him and how his death kind of messed me up in life. So it is a heavy album. Like, it's really dark, so it's basically just about him and my own life. I haven't really gotten to that point where I can write about other people yet. So.
Okay. And how does it feel to actually be nominated for a Juno, which is obviously a huge award here in Canada?
We were totally caught off guard and excited and like, I don't know, just we were all super excited and we went to the Juno weekend and it was like the best times of our lives. Like, we had such a good time. So I think in the end it was just nice, like, meeting all the different musicians that we really respected and just super excited and all in all, it was just a fun experience.
Your latest song is called In This Life, and it's the first single off your upcoming brand new album. What do you want your fans to take away from the song, and when can we actually expect the new CD?
So we can expect the new CD in about October, and I think that's generally what we're shooting for. And the song, In This Life, I don't know what I would expect to take from it. It's probably one of the most positive songs I've ever written, to be honest. It's just about, looking at the bright side of life, Monty Python style, so... I just hope people enjoy it and have a fun time listening to it and take away from it like any song, just give you some sort of an emotional change when you listen to it.
Do you guys have an album title yet for the new album, or are you still working things out?
We are still working things out. I really like films, but the band's not as crazy about it, so we're in the middle of band conversations about what it might be.
Where do you actually see the band going in the next, 12 to 18 months?
Oh man, we kind of, honestly, we don't even think about it because I find like being in a band is a really slow process, getting your name out there and stuff, and you always get yourself high hopes and then, maybe it doesn't do as much as you thought for the band. So at this point, we are literally just taking it day by day and show by show and hoping that it gets us to, we're just going to play a ton of shows and just keep playing and writing and hopefully, it just grows from there and we can all do it full time.
Do you encourage your fans to reach out on social media? Like, are you a Twitter guy? Are you a Facebook guy?
Yeah, we love that stuff. We're pretty active on Twitter and Facebook and stuff just because it's so fun doing that stuff, making little videos, you know, making jokes with fans, talking to fans, getting to know fans. Like, it's a really cool experience. So we try to keep it active on that stuff as possible.
And do you think social media is, like, imperative for the success of the band in a way, like, in just sort of like a, it's like a grassroots way of connecting with new people around the world?
Yes and no. Like, you know, I think, like, Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros could never use Facebook and Twitter, and they'd still be ridiculously popular because their songs are so good. Like, I honestly think it's all about the music first and foremost. Like, you can be a disgruntled, terrible human being in a band and write an amazing song and you'll have a huge following, or you can do the other way, right, and just, you know, be really kind to your fans and you'll get friends and stuff. But I think it's all about the music, to be honest, mostly about the music.
Is there an artist or a group right now out there that you guys in the band would love to collaborate with?
Collaborate with? Wow. Man, that's a really good question. I hadn't really thought about that, but there's probably a ton. I think we'd be too shy, but if we ever have got the confidence in another band to do it, like, man, like the Deep Dark Woods, we could learn a ton from those guys. Elliot Brood, Great Lake Swimmers, those bands are all, like, really, we're really into those bands right now, so... Yeah, I'd say those are the top of Canadian artists, anyways.
What did you think of the Canadian music scene when you went to the Junos, like the Juno weekend? Do you think the industry in Canada is a healthy place to be? And do you see Canadian music influencing other parts of the world right now?
I think if they're not already, they should be. Like, there's some bands that are playing right now in Canada that are just fabulous. And I don't know if they are going international, but they should be. Like, I'll say Deep Dark Woods, for example, like, those guys are ridiculously amazing. Like, they should be as famous as any other band that breaks out because they're just so good. So, and also about the Canadian music scene, like, we found that everybody was so nice at the Junos. Like, we met so many different musicians that are a lot more successful than us, and they were just so humbling and kind. So that's what we found. It was just everybody was super, super nice.
We have people listening right now overseas in Asia and Australia. Do you guys as a band have ambitions to ever head out that way and to bring your music to those countries?
Absolutely. Like, we'd love to take this band outside of Canada. We just feel like it hasn't been time yet, you know? So we're working on it, and we're just kind of trying to get as big of a following as we can in this country first. And then hopefully if one of our songs kind of gets over there and spreads outside of Canada, then we'll follow it up with a tour so we can go play it. But right now it's just a little bit too early for us to branch out.
Now, I know this next question is probably going to be somewhat difficult to answer, but if you could describe the band in, like, three words, what would they be?
Oh, that's a really good question. Partying, funny, weirdos.
I love it. Awesome. Simon, thank you so much for your time today on the show. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's Simon Ward of the Strumbellas. Make sure to check them out on their website, thestrumbellas.ca.
Hey, everybody, this is Simon from the Strumbellas, and you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show.
I know the seasons ain't been changing, and every day looks like rain. But I keep hoping for that sun. The streets are filled with demons, Lord, that's never gonna change. But I still wanna be with everyone. I know there's something for you out there in this life. I know there's something for you out there in this life. The rivers are getting low and the skyscrapers all cover the town. But I still work until the day's done. The people are dressed in black and all the cars, they look the same. But I got nowhere left to run. I know there's something for you out there in this life.
Thank you.
there's something for you out there in this light. I know there's something for you out there in this light.
Big thank you going out to my guests this week, Sky Stevens, Patrick Charles, the Strumbellas, and Donna Marie Thompson. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from Logan Purcell. There are two things to aim at in life. First, to get what you want, and after that, to enjoy it. Only the wisest of mankind achieve the second. Thank you so much for hanging out on the show. Don't forget to check us out on our YouTube channel. All of our interviews are online there, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Also on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Twitter, @KAlexanderShow, and of course our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an awesome week. You and I will chat soon.